Hey, honey, it's time to record the new That's What She Said episode. Honey? All right, I guess we're going to try again next time. Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to the James Bond Complex. I hope you're doing well. This is, of course, the show where we regale and discuss, rejoice in everything from filming to film and everything in between. Ooh. That's right, I'm all alone today, and the reason that I'm all alone is because it's a That's What She Said episode, and she has left the building, so let's get right into it. We're talking, of course, about No Time to Die, and we've both only seen this film twice. We saw it once in Montreal at Operation Finish Line, joined by, of course, the other Canadian-based members of the James Bond Complex, but also Peyot, Mathieu, and King, and Jean from James Bond Quebec. We all got together and we were able to see this wonderful movie finally after having last run an operation for Operation Double Bourbon, which was in March of 2020. So big time frame between actions, between operations that we were able to get together and do. So finally, we get to see this movie. And so, of course, really wasn't appropriate to take notes in the cinema. So finally, home with the home version on Blu-ray, we are able to get my wife's opinion, double wife, and her notes for No Time to Die. So let's get right into it. Now, just before we start, this is how my notes start. Just before we start, she would like to say that she did not like that they added a child to the story. Children have no business in James Bond. And in the past, when we have seen children in James Bond, it always has been for comedic effect. I can think of The Man with the Golden Gun being a prime example of this. Also, what is wrong with this child? She doesn't scream or make a sound. She's specifically talking here about Mathilde, but we will get to that a little bit later on. So the movie starts. This bothers me too, the drunk mother and how she talks to young Madeleine. It's very, very true the way the kind of the discourse between the mother and the child is. Well, it's not very motherly. I mean, obviously there's something wrong on her side. Obviously she's got some sort of ailment. We're not really sure what, and it's never ever made clear either in the previous film Spectre or in this film either. Maybe she's just depressed that her ex-husband, or that's not really even mentioned either. Her current husband is a assassin. So she's just sitting there, and I think it was Jason who pointed out that she's also sitting there drinking boxed wine, which is, I don't know if it's big in Europe for boxed wine. I know that we've talked about boxed wine in North America. It's not a very good wine. So there's young Madeleine. She's there. Is that a Tamagotchi? That's cool. Yeah, a little bit of a 90s reference there with the Tamagotchi. Very cue to how old this movie is, or how old this scene is supposed to be perceived as being. They did a good job casting young Madeleine. So yes, they absolutely did, and Jean from James Bond Quebec did have the opportunity to meet both the actress who plays young Madeleine and the actress who plays Madeleine's mother at an event in Paris, and he was unable to attend. So no juicy stories about that, but you know, Jean is full of juicy stories about the James Bond world, so I'm sure that they will be coming in the future. Matera is where we get to. She says, it's beautiful. Did they really film there? Is that what it looks like? Do they really burn secret like that? Is it a real tradition? So this becomes more of a complicated answer. Did they really film in Matera? Yes. Is that what it really looks like? Yes. Is that exactly how it looks like? No. And, you know, sometimes I feel that they don't represent real places accurately when they do stuff like this. I mean, the parts of it are real, and then they've added backgrounds of other parts of the countryside to make a whole composite image. And at first I kind of had an issue with that. But then I thought to myself, But why would I have an issue with that when I don't necessarily have an issue with them using backdrops of other countries for other countries? Well, of course, Die Another Day was a big thing where that wasn't really Cuba. And having been to Cuba, you could tell it wasn't Cuba. And it kind of ruins the moment knowing it's not Cuba. But in No Time to Die, Cuba wasn't Cuba either. Cuba was Pinewood. And they pulled that off fantastically. So if they're adding a little bit to the image of the place to kind of enhance its beauty, but using its own beauty and just changing, you know, how it's presented, I don't really have that much of an issue with it, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks. The secrets thing, I haven't been able to find anything accurately on that, so I don't know. If anyone out there really knows if that is in a true Italian tradition in that part of the world, you know, let us know, because I couldn't find anything particularly on Matera and the Burning of the Secrets. Is the Acropolis really like that? Is that Vesper's theme from Casino Royale? The answer to that is probably yes. I don't know if, and I don't remember if the Matera scenes, the Acropolis is really in Matera. I believe someone was saying that it's not directly in Matera, but it's close. So it wouldn't have been necessarily the distance that he got to it. But there are a lot of Acropolises that are like that. And yes, that is Vesper's themes from Casino Royale. She's got a very good ear. How did it explode? So we don't know who set that off. If it was a remote, if it was a proximity thing. We kind of suspect that maybe that young man was involved with it somehow. Or maybe it was just Primo. We don't really know. The sound editing in that scene is very good. The sound editing of him going deaf because of the bomb and everything. At the same time, that's very, very, very Archer, the cartoon. I really think that was kind of a little Archer moment. All that was missing was, you know, him picking out his ears going, mop, mop. Would have been funny. But anyway, a very good sound editing for that. The henchmen are really bad at shooting. Well, they are, and probably, you know, former stormtroopers or something. His eye makes him look like a Terminator. How often do you see a guy who dresses like that? And at that point, I pulled out my cell phone, and I Googled a former work colleague. And yeah, some people still do dress like Primo does. Some people do have that hairstyle. It's not uncommon. It's not unusual. The eye is very freaky. But it works for him. I mean, every Bond villain henchman has to have something particular about him. And I think the Primo was a good look. It was a good look for him. That's a cool jump. And she's talking about the motorcycle jump that happens right after that. But that couldn't happen for real. Probably not that well executed, no. Talking about stunts and how they used gallons of Coca-Cola, that must have been so many cans. And that's what I heard. And so then I went on to say, you really think that Chris Corpult just poured out can after can of soda? And she replied with, I said ants. And that's also very Archer. That's how you get ants. Anyway, okay, so she's a very passive person. Maybe that's what bothers me about her. She doesn't talk ever. She doesn't have any emotions on her face, like the daughter later on. And she's talking about Madeline. And Madeline, she does get upset a couple of times in both Spectre and No Time to Die, where she gets upset, but she has the kind of the same upset face all the time. And yeah, she is kind of a passive person, and that's she's not as a lively person as maybe some other actresses. That's absolutely true. This song sucks. It's like the intro to a soap opera. I do not like the No Time to Die theme song. I think it kind of works on a level, but it's just Billie Eilish has such a particular style that I don't really know how well that comes off for a Bond theme. But I also think that some of the alternate Bond themes that we've had over the years, and I'm thinking of the previous film, Spectre, there was a Radiohead version of Spectre, and that kind of gives me the same impression with this song. Kind of dull, depressing, very meh. It's not a great song. It's a decent song. It's not horrible, but Daniel Craig in my honest opinion, there's only been two theme songs that really worked well in the Daniel Craig era, and that have been Casino Royale's You Know My Name by Chris Cornell. And it's not just because I'm a rock guy. I'm not a big fan of Soundgarden or Chris Cornell or Audioslave or anything that he's really done after that. He's got a decent voice. The song is really, really good. And Adele did a wonderful, wonderful job of Skyfall. And I really would have liked Adele to kind of pull off a Shirley Bassey kind of thing and come back for more songs. But anyway, we got what we got. It worked. It won some awards. We're not going to knock it down, but it's still not one of my favorites. Obruchev, great accent. Yes, I like animals. That was like my favorite line of the movie. I think that Obruchev really won me over. I think he's kind of that goofiness, that comic relief that we needed. Really kind of silly, over the top goofiness, but at the same time, like, very, very real. Like his portrayal of the character felt very real to me. Those magnets are cool. Is that real tech? It's hard to say if that tech is real. There have been a lot of experimenting with magnets and magnetic field and magnetic propulsion, and I've seen rail guns using magnetic propulsion, and they've been talking about monorail trains with magnetic propulsion. So technically the technology is there. Would have been practical and cost effective? Probably really not. I really don't like how they made M the bad guy. And I think that we can take this particular comment, and this is one of the things that does bother me about No Time to Die, is that they've left so many loose ends. Now, M makes this horrible mistake, but he's never, ever accountable for it. The entire movie is spent with him covering his tracks. And knowing the way that the movie ends, we know that there's no resolution to this. So this is one of those plot holes that never get resolved that really... It's one of the only things that bothers me about this movie. Jamaica. I like the Book of Mormon line, and I think that was one of the lines that really worked great in the movie. They brought a lot of comedy back, and the whole relationship between Felix and James is really good there. The one thing that I can say, though, is like they didn't necessarily build up to that so much. Like they could have. They could have been working on this for years, but it just didn't pan out that way, you know? We didn't get to the point where they've built up this relationship over the movies. We kind of see them arguing in Quantum, and they kind of have this half relationship in Casino. He's mentioned in passing in Spectre, but absolutely completely absent in Skyfall. So to have them so buddy-buddy in No Time to Die, there's something missing there that kind of doesn't make it feel real. And also, like, I'm pissed how Felix dies is her line here, and it's a bad death, just like M. And I'll agree that this death for Felix is a lot worse than M's death in Skyfall, but it kind of sets the tone. It's that finality that we get for the rest of the movie. Like, everything is final, and there's no point in keeping Felix alive, because I don't believe that Jeffrey Wright's going to be back as Felix in this continuity again. He looks like an old man when he's on the boat with the hat. And I think she may have even referenced that she looks like my dad. He does kind of look like this, you know, older gentleman. His casual looks in this movie are really much, much, much more casual than before. We can tell with the t-shirt and the shorts in Jamaica, and the Tommy Bahama shirt is really, really kind of casual. This kind of gives him real Steve McQueen kind of look, I find. Now I've kind of like back and forth on the hat look. I mean, I wear baseball caps for sports, and I've worn them. I wore them all through high school and most of the CJEP every single day of my life before I stopped wearing them every single day, and then I realized how dumb I looked with a hat on every day. So I'm kind of on the fence about this hat look. I don't always see the practicality of it. So it's an okay look. He pulls it off. It's not as bad as maybe But he does kind of look older. But Daniel Craig does look older. So anyway, let's just keep moving on, and we'll talk about style another time. She's overdressed. And she's talking, of course, about Ana de Armas as Paloma. And she's sitting there sipping a cherry Coke, and she's looking extravagant. And I think everyone can agree that she looked really good. I like the 3 weeks training line. Then that was fun. She's a really bubbly character, and I think that's one of the things that Matt also mentioned that he liked about her. She's kind of like bubbly, ditzy, and not like other kind of Bond girls or Bond girl partners. So it's kind of a nice little change. And she's all absolutely badass. I mean, if you've seen all the training videos of her and all that, I mean, she knocked it out of the park for only 3 weeks training. So then we kind of move things along. We're back in London. Not much to say about the whole, you know, Spectre death scene. I mean, that didn't really phase her too much. I like the Q scene, she says. It's fitting. I like that he's gay. I like that Nomi became 007. So the Q scene is an interesting one because this is the first time that we see Q kind of outside of his element. We've seen Q in different scenes in different movies, at work with, you know, all the employees and at Q Branch. And the tendency in the Daniel Craig era films is to have him as more solitary. In Spectre, Q Branch is basically in this dingy basement and he's working all alone. So it's nice to kind of see that he does have, you know, a family life or a personal life. He mentions the two cats and the mortgage. So we actually see what the representation of the two cats and the mortgage is. Is this posh apartment, and he's waiting for his date. Doesn't matter that it's a guy or a girl. No, it just makes this particular scene more inclusive. And this is one of the points that Double Wife was making about this scene, is that it's finally an inclusive moment in a Bond movie, and it doesn't feel forced. It feels natural, and it just feels like it should be there. And absolutely, at the same time, it kind of brings back down the macho-ness of former Bond films. I mean, a lot of them were kind of dripping with this masculinity or this toxic masculinity, and the last Daniel Craig movies have kind of been removed from that, especially this one, because he's not spending half the movie banging women to get what he wants. So it's kind of a nice change of pace. Why would they use Madeline to get to Blofeld? This is a weird thing too, because I mean, yeah, she's a psychologist. Yeah, she's the only one he'll talk to. This kind of does set up the whole doubt and everything at the beginning of the movie. And when he finds this out, that she's the psychologist that they use, he kind of like confirms that, yeah, she's the bad guy, this is her secret. And then we find out that it's not her secret. So I think it sets it up well. I guess Double O Wife didn't really agree with that point, and she didn't find it worked great. But anyway, the nanobot thing. It's scary because it's close to reality. I wonder if they delayed the movie further because of COVID-19. I guess it's a possibility. I absolutely believe that this is a possibility, and I absolutely strongly believe that they did delay the movie because of that. I believe it's part of it. I mean, I think there was a point where they could have released the movie, and they would have been happy with releasing it, but at the same time, if you're releasing a movie about a bad guy who is infecting people with a deadly disease that can't be cured, and you can't get it out of your system in the midst of a global pandemic, you might think about it twice. And I think that's why they gave it a second look. And this is completely unconfirmed. This is baseless. This is just a matter of my opinion, but it's a possibility that I think. And so does Double Wife. Now, this part is very much like X2 when Mystique injects the guard. Yeah, it is. Like, they're sneaking in something to get Magneto out. And if you remember in X2 specifically, it's Mystique who injects a guard with metal. And then when he gets into Magneto's prison cell, he's able to extract the metal from him and create a weapon to get himself out. I think what she's meaning here is the way that they're just super complicated, and how Blofeld is strapped to a chair and then, you know, trolleyed along on this track to bring him to Bond. I think that's kind of like the X2 reference. It's very similar, very similar. They really did cast the best actor for Blofeld, and I am a fan of Spectre. I did like the movie. Does it present a whole bunch of issues and plot holes and weird plot things? Yes. But you cannot deny that if they had told the story slightly differently, that Christoph Waltz would still have done a fantastic job as Blofeld. This crazy brother business or not, it would still have been a perfect and wonderful Blofeld. And I still think he's a great Blofeld. I like his delivery. I like his mannerisms. I like what he brings to the character. I think it's he plays this maniacal, loose cannon type supervillain really very well. Her secret isn't so big. We knew she didn't know who he was, and they didn't need to make a big deal out of it. Like, how many secrets does she have? I think that it was the perception of her having more secrets than she did. And honestly, going into the movie, I thought that the secrets were bigger than they were. And she doesn't have that much of a secret. I mean, she shot Safin years ago when she was a child, but we knew that story from Spectre and we just kind of developed it. And that was when we first saw the first shooting scenes. The first scenes they shot, I should say, in Norway, and there was the young girl there. I'm like, either, and I'll be perfectly honest with my opinion here, and I don't think I really shared it with many people, but I thought to myself, this could be one of two things. Either Bond has a child that we don't know about, or this is one of the very few flashback scenes that James Bond is ever going to do. And lo and behold, I got both predictions right. But anyway, her secret isn't that big. He comes back. Her secret that she was going to tell him in Matera was, I'm pregnant, we're assuming. And she's always or often dressed in white. And that's true. We see it in Spectre. She's dressed in white. She's either dressed in very light colors or very dark colors. There's no juste milieu, as we would say in French. There's no median. We see her in black in Spectre, and then she's in that white outfit. Going to Morocco or Algeria, and then they go from there to Blofeld, and she's wearing dark clothes again, and then she's wearing light clothes at the end, and then she's wearing it's really back and forth between light and dark. I don't know if that's done purposely for the light and dark, but she's often in white. She very much is often in white. The slinky was a funny moment. Yes, that was a great introduction to it. Oh my God, kids do not listen like that. Followed up by, that's not how little girls ask for apples. Because I am the father of a 4.5-year-old girl, and that's not how she asks for apples. She will basically just draw out the word apples in French to me. She will just yell, pomme, until I give her an apple. And this isn't because she's not able to express herself with a full sentence. This is because she's impatient that I haven't brought her an apple. So just a little bit of an anecdote. 4.5-year-old girls don't ask for apples like that. What thing that people don't seem to notice, and this was pointed out by a French James Bond fan site, is that yes, she's eating apples, but in the background, James Bond has also made crepes. And you could see in the bowl behind him, and you could see later on when he's talking with Madeleine, Mathilde is eating crepes with her hands. So he's made both, or maybe Madeleine's made them, but he's not just awkwardly cut up an apple, because when he's cutting up the apple for her, I'm cringing the entire time because I don't know what he's doing to that bleeping apple, but he's really doing it wrong. She got up all alone, and she got dressed and did her hair. Okay, she didn't do that. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't. We don't know. Anyway, at that age, you can dress yourself. She's just a very, very quiet, timid child, which is kind of not what we're used to in this house. I agree that Nomi shouldn't have given back the 007 moniker. It's worth mentioning that this whole discussion came to a head at Bar George right after seeing the movie, and that one of the participants in the viewing of the movie had mentioned that this absolutely made no sense. There was no reason for her to give back the 007 number because nobody asked her to. James Bond certainly didn't ask her to. She just voluntarily offered to give it back for absolutely no reason at all. This is another thing that we've brought up, or people have brought up many, many times. And I think we need to make a distinction here is that Nomi gave back or kept offering to give back the 007 number. But James Bond never vocally asked for it back or accepted it when being offered to him. So she said it to M, but James Bond said, yes, I am 007, or thank you, 007. He kind of brushed it off. There wasn't really much fanfare made out of it. So the statement, she's making that statement. Should she have made the statement? No, she should have just, she could have kept on being 007. James Bond is James Bond, and he's going to be 007, and there could have been two 007s. He was never taking his official status back. That was never made clear. He was there to carry out the mission. We never got the sense that he was coming back under the full employ of Her Majesty's Secret Service. So there was no reason for that. But anyway, it did kind of move things along. Safin looks like he has cancer. And the scene where he's forcing Mathilde around is the worst. For a parent, it is a very cringy moment where you're seeing a grown man tear her around the poison garden like that while the mother is being held against her will. It's kind of an uneasy moment. It's not the most fun moment of the movie, I'll have to say. That's one of the things that bothered my wife the most. And I'm maybe not as affected by it, but I think it's the motherly instinct that kind of brings it out. And at the same time, it's not something that I'm comfortable with either when children are involved in anything. There's the whole Jack Ryan first season where there's kind of children involved in it as well, and it's just uneasy, being the father of three children. It's kind of a little bit weird. It doesn't affect all fathers and mothers the same way, but it certainly did for us. The plane submarine is cool, and that's kind of one of the first, sub plane kind of gadgets. It's kind of combining a bunch of James Bond vehicles together. If it had wheels and drove on land, it would have been cool too, but yeah, it's kind of one of those cool things that, one of those plausible Bond gadgets that, that exist. Is she coming back? And she means Nomi. She's badass. Looks more trained than Moneypenny was. She just kicked him in the fucking face. And so apologies for the colorful language there, but Nomi did kick Oberchev in the fucking face. And that was kind of really badass. And if they were going to do like they were going to do for Halle Berry in Die Another Day for Nomi, or for Lashana Lynch as Nomi, I think they might have a better chance of doing a MI6 type spin-off in the world of James Bond if they were doing a Nomi movie, or if they were going to continue in this continuity with Nomi and bring back another James Bond in the same continuity. I would hope that Nomi would be back because she did have such a strong performance, and I wouldn't mind seeing a Nomi side movie. But at the same time, do you then call that movie a 007 movie without James Bond? And does it exist in the same continuity as James Bond? Does it come before No Time to Die? Does it come after? And then what do you do for Bond 26? I think those are all important questions that you have to ask yourself. And I just think that the answer is going to be no to a lot of those things. And then to kind of gloss over the fact that James Bond is now dead, they've done this spectacular thing where they've ended James Bond's run and Daniel Craig's run as James Bond. They've closed all this out. I believe that this is the finale of this continuity, and they are going to go with a soft reboot for the next. Why is that child sitting in the front seat? It's very, very unsafe. Transport Canada does not recommend that, and it's super unsafe. So to kind of culminate all the things that bothered us about No Time to Die involving children, we end the That's What She Said episode of For No Time to Die with a comment on why is she in the front seat. I hope you enjoyed this episode. There are going to be more episodes of That's What She Said because, of course, we haven't gone into the back catalog of all the other James Bond movies. We have done the whole Daniel Craig saga. You would have to go back to the old Intrepid 007 podcast to listen to those. We have done all of the Pierce Brosnan saga. Same thing. You'd have to dig back through the archives. On this show, we've done Sean Connery's Diamonds Are Forever, and we will continue to dig through the most recent and the old James Bond movies as much as we can to continue this tradition of watching movies with my wife alive. I thank you very much. You can find us on Facebook, The James Bond Complex, at The James Bond Complex on Instagram, at The Bond Complex on Twitter. And if you're looking for me individually, I'm at 007_intrepid on both Instagram and Twitter. We have a website as well that doubles for our Tumblr account. And as Edgar always says, we have no idea what goes on there. That is Matt's domain and probably going to have some stuff on there eventually. And of course, we still have our YouTube channel. We're still putting regular content on there. So check us out on YouTube as The James Bond Complex. Until then, see you next time. Bonsoir, les amis.